Hello and welcome, listeners, to Ion EDI, the anti-racism podcast where we unpack equity, diversity, and inclusion. This podcast is recorded on the unceded traditional territory of the Sikwetmik people. I am grateful for the opportunity to live, learn, and play on their lands.
My name is Amna. I'm the host for the show. I'm an intercultural storyteller in the Faculty of Student Development, a rather zealous nursing student, and wear many volunteer hats around campus, like being the BCNU student liaison for my graduating class. Someone recently asked me what ties all these hats together, and the answer was a passion for advocacy and equity. Nursing involves a lot of advocacy for your patients, promoting health equity and influencing change on a systems and individual level. I became an intercultural storyteller through first becoming a student storyteller and making student life-centered content that ended up focusing more on intercultural material, which I was then able to make the primary focus of my work. This was in order to promote advocacy and equity for students of all racial and or ethnic backgrounds. What really drives me as an individual and what sits at the core of how I define myself is a person that's incredibly passionate about advocacy and promoting equity, because everyone deserves to have a fair chance at success and to feel that they are welcome and that they are worthy of opportunities. I'm incredibly excited and honored to be hosting this podcast. I never imagined that I'd have a place to come and speak about racism and actually be taken seriously. I've always had too much to say about racism, but at the same time, I wasn't able to express myself properly. Whenever I spoke, it was based on objective information. I wouldn't use my personal experiences as a reference point at all, instead using newspaper articles, different studies, and/or other people's experiences to justify my point. Reflecting back, I think of it like this. When you're not feeling comfortable or supported in your environments, the first thing to go is your voice. You stop talking about what really matters and what's making you uncomfortable. You withdraw into yourself a little bit, and I think it took me a really long time to feel supported enough to talk about racism. The real barrier was just that I was scared of how people would react. I just thought that because it's so normal for people that I know and people that I'm close to experience racism, I couldn't express it to the outside world because it was just something so normal and so expected. And you have to remember, the conversations around racism have become more mainstream in the last few years, but they weren't always this way. And so the first thing to go is your voice, but the strongest part of you to bounce back is also your voice, which is the biggest asset you have. I'm incredibly excited and honored to be able to use my voice to bring to light and discuss the many facets of racism. Oncoming guests have been engaged in anti-racism work in the community, through academic pursuits or research, through working on improving student experiences, and many other ways. I'm incredibly excited to talk and learn from people while sharing the learning and calls to action with all of you as well. As a special treat and little teaser for you, here are some clips from a conversation with my friend, mentor, and supervisor, Alicia Ashcroft. Hello, Alicia. I'm so happy to have this conversation with you today. How are you doing? And would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, and I'm super excited to be here and having this conversation with you. My name is Alicia Ashcroft. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm the writer and storyteller for the Faculty of Student Development.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about allyship and what it's like mentoring students in anti-racist or intercultural work.
Well, my approach to allyship, first and foremost, I would refer to myself as an imperfect ally. Mm-hmm. I think that allyship is a practice. Mm-hmm. I think you have to do a lot of internal work. You have to confront any biases that you have sort of absorbed over time, just living in the world. I think that, you know, and we've often talked about this, that the idea of systemic racism, sexism, or homophobia, it's built into the system. And so you have to sort of step aside from it and view your place in it, which is very confronting and challenging. I think you need to be open to other people's stories and learning. And I think then the balance becomes an individual needs to do that work. And so, you know, whether that's, you know, taking a class or reading a book or listening to a podcast and not relying on any particular population to be a teacher. That being said, I think it's important to connect with any community to ask questions in an appropriate and safe, thoughtful and loving way to make sure that we're understanding things clearly, but you also don't want to just not do that work and then be like, so tell me everything about this experience you're having in the world. Because I think that's part of it. You also don't want to put that pressure on any particular population to do that teaching, because there's just lots of layers in terms of them navigating through the world. That's how I would describe it. And I would actually say as well, Amna, you have taught me so much in the past year. And I, again, when we were talking about this podcast series, I was like, my first thought was, I really can't wait to hear these conversations because they will be so educational. So again, I think it's really important in this space of like, how can we ensure that we're amplifying your voice and creating an opportunity for you to be heard, to make connections in a really meaningful way. So it's my pleasure to be an ally, but I have to acknowledge that I don't always get it right. But mm-hmm. that it's important to keep trying and keep practicing and learn from those bits and pieces. So if you make a mistake, you can't just go, oh, okay, that was it. That was it for me being an ally. you have to go, what did I do wrong? And how could I do that differently? And you know, then move forward.
I find that allyship is kind of, it can be sometimes a little bit of a controversial topic, because it can be nerve-wracking for both people that you're trying to ally with, as well as the ally or potential ally themselves, because there's been a lot of historical context around community isolations and then people taking advantage of allyship positions, writing books about their experience, but taking all that knowledge and not crediting it. So there's a lot of pressure to be a good ally. But like you mentioned yourself as being an imperfect ally, and I like to think that being an imperfect ally is still better than no allyship. But I also concur with you a little bit on the way you kind of state your approach to allyship, because I think it's not just a step-by-step guide, although it could be, but it's like the mindset you bring in and the openness to listen and have that empathetic connection that I find is, in my opinion, at least the best approach to it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what's coming to mind for me is one of our student storytellers from last year, Keisha Anderson,
yes.
talked a lot about accessibility in her work. And what I carry with me is something that she said, which is, you know, or a question that she posed is, how can you support someone, elevate someone, amplify someone without othering them? That blew me away, because I think it really does give a voice to a concern that I think folks have. And I think connecting it to not knowing how to ask a question, not knowing how to bring yourself to the table. So, and again, we talked a lot about language, and you did that wonderful campaign last year about just like, let's just maybe just start with language. Let's start with the foundation. Because again, you know, in terms of how we respond and how we discuss equity, diversity, inclusion, anti-racism, you know, you can say something with a possibly good intention and cause a significant amount of harm. And so that can be really paralyzing to try to engage if you're not necessarily at those first stages of allyship, which is that education piece. If you're not, so again, I think that can just be one of the challenges that can be particularly nerve-wracking is really wanting to connect, really wanting to make a difference, really wanting to find your place in it. And I think too, something I feel I struggle with occasionally is when you do anti-racism work and hear stories about racism, it's very emotional. And you know, at the same time though, not wanting to put myself at the center with my white lady tears.
I love when you say that. This makes me laugh. I don't love that you cry. I find it hilarious when you say it. I don't know. I just start imagine you sitting there, I don't know, in a golf cart with just these giant tears falling. I don't know what happens with my imagination. I'm
with a
really
pink
sorry.
Polo shirt. Yeah, that's exactly
that's it. And Blue Bear just kind of looking up at you going, oh, she's crying. I don't know. So sorry. But that's what my mind jumps to.
No. But yeah, I think that's, I think we've talked about this in the past, but I've gone to a student service conference a number of years ago, and we had this living library. And I had a conversation with a person of color who shared some really impactful stories about their experiences with racism on their campus, and I was really emotional, and afterwards, you know, we had a hug and it was really meaningful. But I look back on that and I struggle with that response, because I hope it wasn't taken as such, and I think the conversation was meaningful, but just not wanting to put myself in the center so that anyone is in a position of having to comfort me of like, oh well, yes, no, I'm sorry, you've just learned about racism, welcome to the conversation. I think that's the struggle, is how can you be emotional and having to process that emotions, but not necessarily leading with it in a way that draws or pulls focus. Does that make sense?
It does. But you know what? I'm listening to you speak and I'm just reflecting a little bit on my personal experiences around racism and discussing things with people. And it's kind of a two-pronged thing for me, where when people cry and bring their emotions into it, it depends on the day maybe, or the person, where sometimes I'll feel a little annoyed, but also I find that emotional response is kind of a positive thing, because I think as humans, although we'd like to say we're very rational, a lot of our responses to situations are based on emotions, and emotions are really powerful ways to make meaningful change. So I would much rather somebody have that emotional experience and that compel them to seek out ways to become a good ally, rather than someone just respond with, okay, I see how it is.
It seems then striking that lovely balance in the middle, you know, not, you know, like, I can't believe your experience is happening to me. I think you just have to be very conscious of your place and positioning in the world, in the room, in the conversation. And I think that awareness is really key in allyship and work in general. So you need to know where your place is. Yeah.
That's a really good point, because it's that whole idea of knowing when to make space for someone else. I think knowing when your voice is going to help the situation, or is it going to suppress an already underrepresented group further? Because it's something that even I think as people of color, we struggle with, where when we're talking about, say, anti-Asian hate rising in the last couple of months, and especially just 2020 as a whole, there's been that kind of flip side for me a little, where I've taken a step back and really listened to people and said, okay, so I understand that this is what you're going through. How can I make it better for you? I know I can't make it go away, but how can I contribute to this to make it better? And we're both underrepresented groups, and I'd like to make this better for you. I'd like to use my privilege right now that I have to help you. What would you like me to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you, I think that's so important, just be, yeah, again, that consciousness of, is this comment in this moment, does it take away from the story I'm hearing? And again, I think there, you know, again, those moments to say, hey, that's something I've experienced as well. And I hear you and I understand you. And again, then it's connecting those two pieces. We're developing this empathy for each other. But again, it's not saying, anyway, enough about you, back to me and my experience. So I think that, again, it's just being really, really thoughtful and listening deeply. I think that that's something I feel I've wanted to do and been doing more of, is just, my voice of course has a place, but at the same time it's like, this is a time to be listening deeply to these narratives and processing it and moving forward with that context of that education, and then applying it to the day-to-day allyship work.
Yes. And I think the big part is just, you know, just checking in with people you're allied with, just going, hey, do you think what I'm doing is an effective way of helping you out, or not necessarily helping you out? Because that, again, I think is a little bit othering, but going in, do you think the way I'm advocating is effective? Am I helping promote the cause, or am I taking away? Just, you know, just having it, being able to be open and vulnerable to feedback. And if the feedback's not great, then that's fine. Just take it and say, okay, I understand that I messed up this time. I'll try to do better next time. I'm hearing what you're saying. It's just, you know, it's validation. It's respect.
You know, and again, to coming back to the old theater training, feedback, feedback is everything.
Yes.
Because again, you could be alienating communities that you want to be in support of. And again, I really want to acknowledge that sort of potential colonial thread of wanting to help, wanting to support, wanting to. So again, even just thinking, coming back to our language of what is my place? How can I do some good without causing some harm? So I think if you do have people in your life that you can ask those questions to, you know, you have to accept the answer as it is. You can't push back and be like, no, that's not what I mean. You have to accept that. But I have received some really helpful feedback in my life where I've been listening deeply and hearing like, what folks are telling me or saying about the, you know, again, different kinds of allyship. But, you know, we don't want to just post that black square in this performative approach on Instagram and then not do that work in real life in real time. So I think we have to be thoughtful about the criticism that we receive personally, or just sort of, again, when we're learning about allyship, there's so much information out there about how to be a good ally. And again, how to bounce back after you've made a misstep.
I think minorities can make their views clear and they can advocate for change, but dominant groups have that power to make that change tip over sometimes, because I know it sounds really controversial, but say, even if it's just about myself, so I have the power to go and convince people like me about a topic, but they're probably not going to listen to somebody else who's part of that group because they're already biased against them and they already don't want to listen. But I'm, for example, seen as more credible by my group of people. And so they'll take my word for it more. So I think it's that understanding the amount of power you have just by being part of that dominant group, and that power, but also that privilege and responsibility.
Yeah. And I think too, looking at those threads in the media that we consume, the stories, you know, the storybooks we saw as children, you know, movies, all of that, like really looking at the stories that were taught and looking at our education and seeing what was missed from the curriculum.
Yeah.
And so I think you do have to look at it from lots of different perspectives. But again, too, I think it can be challenging, especially when we do, you know, EDI and anti-racism work, especially in the university setting, that there is a real academic approach to it. And everyone really is on board on different varying levels, but everyone is, yes, we're moving towards this shared goal, anti-racism. But again, so sometimes we talk about like, we're preaching to the choir, like how do we reach different aspects of our community and in the world in which the folks are not in the choir. They're not even in the church.
I completely understand.
Yeah. And wanting to, because again, coming back to the idea that doing anti-racism work is confronting, especially from dismantling white supremacy as a white person and acknowledging those positions of power. And I think some people really push against it. Well, I'm not privileged because I have, you know, these different aspects. And so I think privilege is a word that people really trip on. Because again, it makes you maybe think of that vision of, from the white lady tears, you know, where privilege is not a country club. It's how you move through the world and what you have to prepare for when you leave the house and when you go into a store, and what kind of interactions will you possibly anticipate, and how will it impact you as you go through your job or your education, moving through systems. Which again, if you've never had that experience, you don't realize that it is an obstacle. So that, again, understanding that privilege is about access. And again, you've taught me a lot, Anna, about your experience moving through the world.
Yeah.
What are your concerns? What do you have to watch out for? And living in that state of anticipatory anxiety. And I think that's important for people to know that. Again, coming back to the idea you've talked about often about racism being a health issue.
It is, for sure. touched on something that I wanted to mention, is the comparative suffering. Mm. You don't need to compare your suffering to somebody else's for their suffering to be valid. Nobody's saying that your experiences aren't valid or that what you're going through isn't sad and shouldn't be supported. We're just saying that, you know, this is also an issue and we can focus on multiple issues at a time. And so I think as humans, we tend to do that, is we try to compare our suffering to others, and we may or may not be invalidating other people's experiences. But if we're really working towards, like, I like to think I'm working towards a utopia world where everything is perfect. But if we're trying to work towards that, there's room for improvement for everybody. We just got to know what conversation and what time it is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like what you said, is it's so true that you, that comparison game, when utilized inappropriately, it really diminishes someone else's experience. And so we don't have to try to one up each other in terms of how hard we're working, how hard life is, what we have to work through. Again, this is an opportunity to make space, especially to it. This makes me think of a bit about like responding to disclosures in the vein of violence prevention and response. How you respond matters. So again, thinking that this is an opportunity to build trust and to make a connection. So if someone says, I experience racism when I go out into the world, and you respond in any way other than, I'm, you know, thank you for sharing, I'm really sorry this has been your experience, and thinking about what questions you want to ask, what feels appropriate, as opposed to being like, well, you know, when I go out in the house, this is what I deal with. Then I think that's, it's so important, because again, if you respond in a way that feels hurtful or dismissive or diminishing to the speaker, then that trust is lost. That person is most likely not going to come back and give you more information or insights, or, you know, just, especially if you're just thinking of friendship connections, in addition to making connections about the work in particular. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you want to listen thoughtfully. And actually, Anna, if I can throw a question back your way, about responses. I provided a few examples and then immediately was like, does that feel like a meaningful response? Because you don't want to do something canned. But what are your thoughts on someone responding thoughtfully and respectfully to a disclosure of an experience of racism?
You know what? I'll kind of flip that a little bit for the response that I hate, because this it burns just a deep hatred in me all the time for that potential response, is that, oh, are you sure I don't think that's what they meant. And that's especially evident when you talk about microaggressions. And microaggressions are like pennies in a jar. You, one penny itself isn't going to, you know, buy you a Slurpee at 7-Eleven. I love that example. But over time, that jar full of pennies can buy you something. And that jar full of microaggressions can, maybe like one or two, it's like, okay, I don't like this, but what else am I going to do? I still have to go to work. I still have to go to school. But when that piles up, it becomes a health issue, because we're already living in a fast-paced, stressful world. And to have that weight carried around and invalidated, it's just, it drives me absolutely just insane. It just makes me so mad all the time. And I've already gotten a little fired up just thinking about it. But I hate invalidating responses. Even if you don't know what to say, don't say, are you sure? I don't think that's true. Oh, are you? But really? Just when someone comes to you with a problem, you don't tell them that's not true. And that's, you respond at that face value. And then there's room for looking for, you know, if it's an investigation in a workplace, there's room for that investigation afterwards. Learning from the person's experience is just, you need to listen to them. Sorry, not learning, listening to that experience, because that might be the difference that they have in between that jar kind of exploding and tipping over, or that jar kind of lightening a little bit. There's still pennies in there, but it might be a little lighter. So yeah, it's more that I don't think you can really screw it up that bad. You just have to kind of go, oh, okay, I'm listening to your experience right now. how would you like me to help? What could make this better? It's the same as with mental health disclosures, and looking at best practices around students revealing mental health struggles. It's just, what would you say to a friend who was in distress? Don't think about it as particularly racism. Think about it as a friend in distress.
Yeah, that's an exceptional approach. Again, coming back to the idea of any paralysis that might occur around those conversations and feeling like that initial response of like, I really want to get this right. Well, then possibly impact you. Like, are you sure that happened? And that approach, I think, is so important to you. You want to just believe someone.
Yes.
You want to believe what they said. You don't want to. And again, like, you don't want to ask too many questions, especially questions that sound accusatory. Well, what were you doing? And what were you wearing? What were you, how were you to blame for this experience? Because again, that might not be how it's meant, but that's certainly how it can be received. Things that I hate is, like, say, around mental health disclosure.
Yeah.
When people say, you know, you don't have to talk about this, which I know is possibly like, you don't have to, you don't have to do this if this is upsetting to you. That really always cuts a conversation at
things. Yeah.
And so thinking too, again, we'll come back to theater, that approach of like an improv game of just like, how do we keep this conversation going in a meaningful way? And that gets us to a point. If someone is trying to talk about it, it's because they most likely want to talk about it. They want to be heard and seen. Mm-hmm. And how you respond really impacts how that conversation moves forward.
Oh, for sure. And that brings me into just the work that you do supporting students working in and on interculturalism and anti-racism. You know, sometimes when you're trying to support someone, there's always room for it to go horribly wrong. Just, you support students working in anti-racism work, aka me. What's that experience like for you?
I mean, it's really important work. I will also say that I have at times found it to be intimidating work for all of the reasons that have been aforementioned in this conversation.
Yeah.
Fear of wanting to get it right. That you often refer to 2020 as the year of reckoning.
Yeah.
And it is this dismantling of white supremacy and looking at your place in that system, whether you're a white supremacist or racist or not. You have work to do and you have to pull that apart. And so I think at times that has felt challenging or emotional. So I approach the work from a learning perspective, and that I'm learning alongside the students. I often think of you as being a teacher to me.
Aww.
And that my role is that you're bringing so much wisdom and experience to the table. And then my job is basically is helping find a place for it in terms of like whether we do a podcast as we're doing or a blog or whatever. So I really do try to think of it from a perspective as being a learner and welcoming the education I receive. And just, you know, again, with working with you, when you have an idea, like when you did that post around Halloween, around my culture is not a costume.
My overnight cooking session.
Like a casual, you know, October 28th. And you're like, I have this idea for Halloween.
I feel like it was the 29th, to be completely honest.
It was very close to Halloween, but again, you were excited and the idea came to you. And then my job became prioritizing your work. And we looped in Kyra Garson from Intercultural and Sarah Walls from Accessibility Services, because then it wound up expanding to not just about culture in terms of race, in terms of thinking about, you know, is this a homophobic or transphobic? Is this making fun of able-bodiedness? So all of those things. It was such a really amazing guide that you created. So then my job is to just catch up with you and then help with the administrative logistics. But the ideas are so brilliant. So I'm just, I'm just trying to lift it up.
We are coming closer to the end of our conversation. You know, actually, I'd like to make a little bit of a TV show recommendation before we end. This whole conversation just reminded me of my favorite show, Blackish, Tracy Ellis Ross, Anthony Anderson. I know it's my favorite show. I talk about it constantly. But one of the episodes that really came to mind was, it's called What About Gary? And it's one of the characters' cousin. And her husband tries to educate that white cousin on how to be an ally. And they go through this whole just emotional roller coaster. And it's just, it's really great to watch. And I think people will be able to connect some of what we've spoken about today with that show. But yeah, it's my favorite show. I have to talk about it constantly.
Yeah, I've seen a couple episodes and that really makes me want to check it out. But I do follow Tracee Ellis Ross on Instagram.
Oh,
and
we love her.
She is magnificent. I'm excited for you to be doing this show. I'm excited for, you know, the conversations that you're going to have. And I know you're so looking forward to chatting with different folks on campus and in the community. And it's a joy to know you and to work with you. And this is, keep on shining, my friend.
Thanks so much, Alicia. It was such an amazing time having you here.
Thank you so much, Emna.
Thank you for listening on the very first episode of Eye on EDI. We have many exciting episodes coming, so be sure to keep your eyes peeled and ears ready to listen. You can find more information about this podcast, past episodes, and mental health supports on the website eye-on-edi.tierubox.ca. Thank you.